find your people. And that's all you need in anything. Not everybody's going to buy your product. You know, it's true what they say. Don't say, who's your market, everybody? No. Find the people that you're serving. Find the people that also feel like they want to serve the same group.
Welcome to Lessons in Leverage, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of success. We'll help you unlock the secrets of leverage so you can amplify your impact in the world. Here is your host, Spencer Lowe.
Welcome back to another episode of Lessons in Leverage. I'm thrilled today to be with Genevieve Paturo. She's joining us from New York, and she has this incredible story and I think is doing something really significant. You know, as we talk about leverage, sometimes it's easy to think about leverage of how do I get more money? How do I get more status? How do I get more stuff? When people think of leverage sometimes as this way to get more, and it can do that. But it's also about finding more fulfillment. It's also about having a bigger impact. It's about being able to do more and accomplish more for the world and give back. And so I'm excited to hear about your story today, Genevieve. So thank you for being on the podcast with us.
Oh, thank you for the invitation, Spencer.
So take me back to before you were working on everything that we're going to get to, you know, as far as where you're at today. Take me back to what was life like for Genevieve before all of, when you were in your day job, when you were going to work every day, on what probably felt at the time like the expected path, the normal path. Tell me where you were at mindset-wise and kind of what that experience was like for you.
Sure. Well, I wasn't on what was expected of me path.
Ooh, tell me.
First born of Italian immigrant father, Italian parents who really expected me to get married and have kids. I was the first.
You weren't.
Girl. So I felt, you know, I felt that from them. You know, they steered me and family was everything. And so I knew that's what they were looking and hoping and expecting. But I had a different idea. I wanted to work in corporate America. I wanted to work in Manhattan. I was close enough. And I wanted to be single for, you know, as long as I could and just have no limits to the success I could have in the entertainment business in New York. And that was a role model I had was the Mary Richards character that Mary Tyler Moore had in her show in the 70s. And I used to watch this successful woman in the man's world. And I thought, how great would that be? You know, and I knew I was bucking the family system, but I did follow that road. And so I was in Manhattan. I did leave home, again, much to my parents' dismay. And I did forge ahead. And I had this wonderful career as a single woman in Manhattan. And it was very exciting. Everything I thought it would be, stressful, workaholic, but all my friends and colleagues were in the same boat. We all thought we had a great job. We were all on the, I would say the money track, but it was early in my career, so I wasn't making those bucks yet. But I certainly saw, as we all did, that we were on that track. And so 12 years in, here I am, pretty happy with the way things are going, not realizing that it was all here. It was all the way it looked, and it was all the way I positioned it to be successful and have the status I wanted amongst the people I considered those who measured success, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's why there was this opening one afternoon as I was just relaxing in my own condo. And I heard this voice in me, and it asked me a question. It asked me, if this is the next 30 years of your life, is this enough? And Spencer, it was shocking, really shocking. I mean, I didn't put anything together except I was startled because I heard the voice, you know, and I heard it, and I knew it was from here. It was a deep voice. It was mine, but it was low. It was. It went deeper than this voice that I dealt with all day long. And I realized, you know, within seconds, there was something in that family tradition that was expected of me that I grew up in. And I loved my family. You know, there were certainly warm, loving feelings there. But I realized that there was something that I did miss and I didn't pay attention to. And I thought, how can I bring children into my life? Because I did have nieces and nephews, and I did love playing with them. And that was the one thing that moments after that question had flooded my mind. How do I bring children into my life in some way that would fill this clear longing in me that was a hole.
Wow.
And so, yeah. And so, I mean, that's, I think we all have that voice. Some of us continue to push it down. You know, I must have. I can't imagine that was the first time that a voice ever tried to come out or show me, you know, something. I'm sure I was too busy to pay attention. I think now, since we've been through, you know, a life scare and people are looking for fulfillment, we are in touch with that voice more. But I wasn't until that moment. And I tried to think of a way to bring children into my life. And I remembered a story I'd seen on the news about the police and social workers storming this apartment where these children were being hurt by parents, people who were supposed to take care of them. And I called the police and I said, where do you bring these children? I think once you acknowledge a voice or a feeling that something's missing and you think you might be on to what you're really looking for, events happen, things unfold, and you are led to the next step. Because I don't know why I thought of that teeny news segment. I don't know why I picked up the phone and I asked the question, where do you bring these children? I mean, that was not something that I would have ever thought I'd think of. And they led me to a couple of emergency shelters. And I called and I asked if I could come and read to the children because they seemed, you know, traumatized. And they welcomed me in. Now, this is more than 20 years ago. And here in New York, we had something called 9/11. Pre-9/11, things were different. And they literally welcomed me in. And that's where I started to feel my heart, probably for the first time, feel it for anything other than my immediate family. And that changed everything. So we could talk about how it changed everything, but I didn't know how to pause.
Yeah. You certainly will. There's a lot to unpack there that I appreciate you sharing. I want to start with, you know, this idea of what it was like to want to pursue a path that was a little bit against what maybe your family expected or society at the time expected. I think that's especially hard for women. I just recently heard a quote that I thought was really powerful, and they said, women are expected to work like they don't have kids and parents like they don't have any work. And that's obviously an impossible problem, as women have entered the workforce and, you know, they have not just, and you know, there's not been an easy way to just say, okay, I'm going to compete with men, yet I'm not going to change any at home responsibilities. I mean, that's just an impossible problem. So obviously things have to give and we have to adapt as a society. But I'm curious for you both what it was like at the time, and then does that particular quote resonate? And as you think about that, how did you find a way to balance these? Because what you're saying is, hey, look, I didn't just look at it as the normal path of, am I going to be a mom? Am I going to be a worker? You know, I didn't choose between the two. I really created my own way where I knew I had this passion for my career, but I also had a longing to help children. And it feels like you really beautifully sort of interwove those at this time that we all, I think, run into sometime near our 30s, 40s, somewhere in our life. You kind of wake up to like your mortality and like, what am I doing? And does my life matter? And that inner voice you're talking about starts talking louder and you realize I had this clear plan, but am I going in the right direction? And so anyways, I've taken us in a few different directions. I want to simplify it back. So just want to hear your thoughts on that. How do you balance that inner voice and create your own path when it seems like things might be pulling you in different directions?
Right. Well, let me respond to the quote. I think it's easier for a woman to work and raise her kids than it is for a woman to pursue a career that she wants to go far in. Right. That's the difference. I could have gotten a job. I could have always along the path gotten a job that didn't take up my energy, you know, 24/7, and that I wasn't looking for that corner office, because that's what I was doing. I was looking for that success. Yeah. That's a very big difference between having a job and giving it, you know, 100% of you. That's what the killer is when you get to that point and you've invested that time, those years, and you look at it and you say, wow, that sort of looks empty after everything I've given. And that's where I think the doubts and the self-confidence and the resistance to change is for so many people. And the difficulty is because that's a hard path change. That's not easy. You know, I admire some of these the younger generation today. They know that they want to love what they're doing. They're more creative. They're not rushing into getting a job. They're looking for something that is they can call their own, you know, and they're coming up with ideas for jobs that we never could interview for that didn't exist. You know, they're making up their own jobs and starting more companies. And I think, you know, I wasn't taught that. I was never even taught the word purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think that younger people are. And, you know, I hope to contribute to that lesson that's the difference between working for your head and working for others and working through your heart and serving others.
You know, one of my favorite principles was taught first by Jim Rohn and then subsequently by Tony Robbins and Simon Sinek, who have all really highlighted this need to start with why would be how Simon Sinek puts it in his book. You know, it's this idea that you have to understand, you have to have really compelling reasons for something in order to find fulfillment in what you're doing. And I think people today talk about finding their passion as like, what do I like? What's fun? What do I enjoy? And then they'll realize that everything can be empty. Like you said, you enjoyed your career and you were giving it all of you. And yet you still this emptiness at some point. And you realized, all right, I've got to listen to my heart to find really why. What impact do I want to have? What is my why that's driving me that is going to be more durable, that's going to be more rewarding, that's going to have that purpose? And so, you know, do you have any advice for either young people or anyone who might be at that inflection point in their career where they're starting to wonder, does this matter? Is this really what I want to do for 30 years, you know, to put it the way that you put it? And when you get to that inflection point, how do you tune in to really listen to your heart and find those really powerful reasons that will drive you?
I think if we're honest with ourselves, I think most of us really feel good and feel fulfilled when we're helping someone. Mm. So you can help someone, you can help the nice people across the street, you can pick up food for the elderly, you can take somebody's dog for a walk, or you could, you know, adopt a dog, all of those things. But people haven't come to terms yet with that as a purpose that is really the underlying reason for searching for what fulfills you. So I think it's a slippery slope with the why thing, because there are a lot of good people who their why might be because I have my husband or my wife left me and I have to have three jobs. My why is to put food on the table. And I certainly get that why. And if you are blessed enough to go within and think about how to put food on the table and figure out how to feel fulfilled and not pressured so much and not doing it out of fear or despair or survival, but doing it to benefit and teach that there are ways that we can serve each other that are healthy and are the way we would want to teach our children to find the why, to find a purposeful why beyond the immediate need and the desperation.
Yeah.
So I think the younger we start, the better. And it's a lot easier to be taught, you know, in high school and middle school, different ways to identify what you love to do and how it serves. Because whether you know it or not, that makes the difference to waking up in the morning and going to sleep at night, that you've provided love, an object, a way for people to feel better, to do something. You've contributed to the greater good in some way, whether with knowledge, with technology, with your services. So I think it's important to teach younger people purpose so that you don't find yourself miserable or regretful when you're 38 years old.
So beautifully said. I think, you know, finding what you love that also serves. I think that second part, so easy to miss, but has so much value there that you just gave to the audience that really people need to think about, that elevates just something that's fun or something that I might like to really finding that value and that purpose. So I love the way you said.
And add something if I might.
Please.
I think we also don't realize, and maybe some people think it's selfish, but when we are doing something that we love and we're sharing it, that is a contagious high, right? If you're teaching someone, or you're showing someone, or you're asking for help in doing something, you're talking about it, and you are clearly exuding this high and this energy, right? We're energy, you know, we can feel each other. How many times you go somewhere and you say, oh, you know, after 5 minutes, that person, I'm done, or, oh, I want to stay over here with this guy. You know, we know that. And when you share that, and creative people do that all the time, songs, theater, movie performances, teachers, nurses, doctors, all kinds of people, when they're doing what they love and they're sharing it with you, you feel good too. And that's service. It's not selfish to do what you love. It's selfish when you don't share it.
What a great insight. So as you think about people that maybe are struggling, you know, because they're on whatever that path is, maybe they're on the path that people expected them to. Maybe they're more like you and they took an unconventional path, but they find themselves at a place where they think they feel a little trapped by the perceptions of others. You mentioned in your story, this feeling of sort of, as you were awakening to, is this all there really is? There was kind of, it sounded like maybe a little bit of a looking around at who you thought was successful and saying, I mean, that's what it seems like I'm supposed to do. And so we all kind of do this. We all use an environment. And so if we're choosing an environment of highly successful people, then that might drive us to be really successful. If we're using the environment of our parents, then that might have led you down a very different path in life. So whatever those references are that we've set for ourselves, you can find yourself feeling a little bit trapped, I think, in the expectations of others, in the weight of, you know, maybe the decisions you already made, almost a sunk cost fallacy of just being like, well, I've already put 10 years into this and I'm at this point and I'm making this money and I couldn't possibly give this up. And so many people wish they were in my position, or, you know, this is a privileged position I'm in. And so all these narratives in your head, and you talk about this, shifting from this head voice to this heart voice, which I love. I think it's such a beautiful metaphor. And so how do you do that? Talk to me a little bit about how you help people do that when they're in their head voice, they're focused on the external world and what people expect of them. How do you get back to the internal world and to your heart?
Yeah, it's the older you are, the more responsibility you have, the harder it is. And I get that. You know, I coach people all the time, and it is something that you have to recognize. You know, I would never tell anyone, oh, come on, you know, just make the change. Trust me, it feels good. You should be doing this. This is your part. No, I mean, I made a mess of my life. Thank goodness I put it on track, but I get it. I get how scary it is. I get how we worry about what other people think. And on top of that, if you have kids or someone, you know, people that you are supporting, and you go to them and say, I don't really want to be a CPA anymore. I want to dance. I can imagine, first of all, the fear in you to have to say those words, and then actually, you know, taking that first step. I know it's scary. So I teach the slide and I teach the jump. I'm a jumper. I always do. I don't know why. I think you have that gene or you don't. And I have that jumper gene. But I teach a lot of people who aren't financially prepared. I was not. Or in any other way, shape, or form prepared. The slide method. Because you would be surprised, Spencer, at how it changes your world, your life, your energy, your demeanor. If you let 1 hour of your week be devoted to what you put on the back burner, because that's where people put their passion, their love. They don't make enough time for it because there are a million and one excuses and people that can take your time away from doing things. And also, if it's a crazy idea you think people will laugh at, you don't tell anyone, so you don't give yourself that hour a week or more. So I teach how to find a comfortable way to bring whatever it is, dance, song. If you want to be a doctor when you're 40 years old, if you want to go into nursing, if you want to be a teacher, you know, a lot of women, men go into teaching after a crazy corporate career, you know, because they need that, those kids, they need that heart. That's what it is. That's what it is when we want to be with kids. They let us be kids. You know, you feel off them. They're not afraid. And we want that. We hunger for that. So I help them find a way to introduce that in some way, shape, or form that they're comfortable as a slide into their life for a week, for an hour a week. And it's almost like you're giving yourself this gift that you've put in the closet, in the bottom of a closet, and you're taking it out. And, you know, it's shiny and it's beautiful. And it makes you feel really good and you carry it with you. And before long, somebody's going to say to you, what's different about you? You know, and you can tell them or not, but it makes a difference. So the slide helps a lot of people.
I love that because we know this. We know that most of the friction happens prior to starting. Most of our imagined or real tension is with taking the first step and trying to get started at all, not knowing how to get started, not having fears about what will happen if we start. Like you said, worrying about what people will think. And so I love that as a strategy to take a first step. You know, just this morning, I was very tired, but I had made a commitment that I was getting up at a certain time and that when I got up, I was going to jump out of my bed and do push-ups, which is what I do every morning to wake my body up, get the blood flowing. And so I repeated my favorite quote to myself. Tony Robbins said it. I said, don't negotiate with yourself. I got out of bed and I said, but I'm only doing one push-up, because as soon as I realized I didn't have motivation, I said, okay, I'm not doing 50 push-ups, just doing one. And I got out of bed and I started and I still did almost 50 because as soon as I started, I was like, well, I can't just do one. I can't just stop after one push-up. It doesn't even feel like I did anything. I didn't get the blood flow. That's not the purpose. And so I did a second one and a third one. And then I'm just in a rhythm. I'm like, okay, I might as well just, you know, push these out. And so I ended up getting myself so much farther. And it was that same slide technique. It was just, let me just get over this tension in my mind that is just getting in my own head, to just do the first step. And by the time I was done, I was wide awake. I felt good. I was happy that my day was now on track. Now I went down and did the rest of my workout. And I, you know, took my daughter to school and was able to, all the other things that would have started to get impacted by me sleeping in or not keeping my commitment to myself, everything went better. And I think that's exactly how this can be for people who apply what you're teaching here. Is once you're giving yourself just an hour a week to do this thing, you might find out on accident that you want to do a little more of it, or it might be easier to reward yourself like you talked about and to feel that energy. And you find out that it was never as hard as you thought, but you just don't know if you don't make time to start. And that's, you know, incredible principle. Oh, go ahead.
All for purpose. And if you feel that 1 hour or maybe 2 hours, or maybe you change the activity, it might be enough. Yeah. It might be enough. You know, nobody says there's pressure that you're going to have to quit your job. Some people do, some people don't. But you need to give that purpose, that life.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that too. I think, you know, we're in an interesting time where I just recently read an article that talked about how the mood towards children in the U.S. has become almost antagonistic, almost a little bit towards the side of, like, this lady had basically traveled and she noticed that when she went to Greece on the tram, everyone was picking up her kids and helping and... Pardon. There's this very communal support of when they got to a restaurant, if there wasn't enough seats, they'd give the seats to the kids. And so she was talking about how society really revered children. And then when she came back to the U.S., it was like, can you get your kid off me? Can you, you know, take your kid out? Get your, like, don't let your kid be a problem. You know, your kid shouldn't inconvenience me. And even some people, I don't want to have kids because they're an inconvenience. And there's this idea of, you know, that she was sharing that was kind of like, maybe we've swung a little too far in certain directions towards our attitudes towards kids. And I love the way that you're talking about it, where there's this idea. Sometimes people think it's sort of a, you know, am I going to have kids or not have kids? And where you framed it as, it's not so much that as much as, am I going to make an impact? And children are this incredible gateway to finding fulfillment. Whether they're your own children or you're teaching other children or you're helping children in need, I think there's something, there's this feeling inside of me as I listen to you that is like, we might have gotten a little out of touch with this core human feeling and purpose of loving children and helping them and the joy that can bring and the purpose that can give. Not that that's the only way to find purpose, but it feels like in our sort of consumerism in the U.S. and our need to get ahead, we've kind of created this problem where children aren't always convenient. They're not always. So what would you say to someone who maybe nowadays feels that way? If they're listening to this podcast, they're like, gosh, children are just, they're this huge problem. And, you know, maybe they feel that antagonism a little bit. What have you found that's been so special? Why has that been such a meaningful part of your purpose?
Well, first, let me say, I think a problem, and we all have it, is we're so tired. Is that what everyone is saying? I am so tired. I don't have any energy. I don't have any time. I'm so tired. I have no rest. Okay, that's why we're all into the looking at wellness and trying to avoid strokes and trying to avoid, you know, drinking too much and all those vices because we are so tired. I think that people are realizing it's because we're chasing something that doesn't fill all. It doesn't fill the hole. Now, maybe we have to take a step before and realize that it will create a hole if we're not finding purpose in what we're doing. You know, and I think we are looking more, as we're talking about this, we are looking at it because we did have what I think COVID was a near-death experience. For a lot of us, it hit family. It hit
wake up.
Everybody else was, I was afraid, you know, what could really happen. And I think a lot of change has come from that. Now, we're still heavy on the, I'm still so tired. We're trying to teach. It's hard to teach wellness to somebody who's lived a certain way for 50 years and has status and success in their eyes for them to take a break or slow down. But I think in the United States, I think women are feeling less pressure. Now, we're the ones who are more, only ones who can have them, and we're sort of trained, so to speak, to be a mother. I think we do have a nurturing side that's very pronounced, but it can develop in different ways. You know, wow. I didn't have that clock ticking. I had friends who had clocks ticking. They wanted to have children. I did not have that, but I had something else that was related to children. And also, I think I believe in God. I believe in the universe. I believe that there are unseen helpers and support. And I think I was meant to do this. I think I was led down this path because this was a gift I could give children and something that hadn't been done and something. There was a hole there. There was a void there, and it sort of filled my void to be. I can never imagine being a mom because they have life in their hands every single day. I just contribute, but I think that's the way it was supposed to be for me. Right. That's because I let go of trying to get ahead of the plan. Maybe. I don't know, because I didn't think this. I mean, I didn't set out saying, oh, I'm not having kids. This is what I am supposed to do. That's looking back. I look at my life and say, and other people who have a strong religious belief say, that was the plan, you know.
That's such an important point that I've seen as I've talked to people who've accomplished really significant things is there's this pattern of oftentimes in the moment, it's really hard to know you're on the path. It's really hard to know that things are going to work out. And they push through and they find a way to do that. But in hindsight, when you turn and you look from the other direction, it's so obvious in retrospect how the pieces fit together. Mm-hmm. And often it's almost counterintuitive. Doing what you think the path is and following it closely often in hindsight will look like you didn't really fulfill your potential. But pursuing with passion the areas where you do feel called, where you do feel pulled, where your heart is really driving you and putting yourself into that, even when it makes no sense, I'm sure for you, Given everything you'd accomplished in your career, a transition towards helping children probably was not to be. There's probably, I imagine, people that told you you're crazy or maybe thought it was a bad idea.
Yeah.
Nip cost. And so in the moment, that probably didn't look like the destined path that you were being led down. So tell me about that specific moment and just what that transition was like and how you navigated.
Yes, I didn't tell anyone for 6 months because of everything you said and more, because I couldn't even fathom how I could make it work. It became an obsession. For anyone who's listening, I'll bring you down the half of what happened next. So when I went to reach the children in the emergency shelters, I saw with my own eyes as I was sitting on the floor, because there were no chairs for adults, waiting for the little ones to come in so I could read to them. I sat on the floor in my suit. And when they came in, my heart dropped. The clothes they were wearing were fitting, were soiled. They hadn't had a bath or a shower. Some of them were crying. They were traumatized, just the looks on their faces. And they sat on the floor with me, and I read stories in silence. I didn't say a word. They stared at me like, I kept thinking, oh my God, I want to take them. I don't want to take them away from this, you know, I mean, people are caring from the shelter, but I can't imagine how sad and scared they feel. And that was how I felt every time. So when I saw how they were going to sleep after I left them, I snuck and looked where they were bringing them to go to sleep. Now, they were safe. Thank God they were taken from where they were. But they were sleeping in the same clothes. They were afraid. They were huddling together. And there wasn't what my mom gave us. And I had that flood of memories. My mom sitting on my bed, my sister's bed, my brother's beds in the other room. The stories, the laughing, the snacks, you know, at least half an hour. And the girls sighing, then half an hour with the boys. And of course, pajamas. And here I am. That was what stuck out to me. They're trying to sleep in their tight, dirty clothes. And I asked if I could bring pajamas. So I did. They thought that was a nice idea. And I did. And I gave them out. But one little girl was terrified to get close to me. She wouldn't let me get close to her. She just wouldn't take anything from me. And the other kids had taken their pajamas. And finally, I tried the last time. She was just standing there with her caregiver. And I knelt down and I said, honey, and I explained, you know, they're soft. You can keep these. You could probably wear them all day tomorrow. They'll fit you. They're pink. You have pink in your shirt. And she leaned in and she asked me, what are pajamas? And that's when I lost it. That's when everything up to that point was, I don't want to say erased, but didn't matter. It didn't matter. It slid down the slide and was gone forever. And that became just, I was just focused on, and I kept saying to myself, how many of these children are there? And that forced me to work hard and to go after it. However, I didn't say anything, as I said, get back to the question, for 6 months, because when my brain started to think, are you seriously thinking about walking away from that? You have a mortgage, young lady. What are you really going to do? Visit these kids every day, shop every day, and go there for an hour at night and give pajamas around the world? Are you crazy? And of course, it was right. It had, you know, it had merit. Those questions, I had no answers, let alone tell anyone, because who could possibly say, that's nice, don't worry about the money, doing the nice thing? And that was very difficult to live with. And I got the courage up to have a drink with a coworker, not in my company, because I didn't want her to know anything, but somebody else who was similarly climbing the corporate ladder. And I thought, you know, oh, she'll think this is so nice. Maybe she'll help me. Well, she read me the riot act. Are you crazy? You worked so hard to get here. What do you think? You're saving their lives? You're not building them a home. You're not adopting them all. You, what are you doing? Can't you just do that like on an afternoon, weekend afternoon? And that was it. I didn't zip up for another couple of months. And it was really difficult, because I didn't know where to turn. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't shut off that need, that obsession. And I couldn't justify why I lost interest in that. I was so lost. I was so lost. And I started dating somebody, and clearly he thought if we got serious, you know, I'd have a job. And I said, I have to just tell him, because if he's going to go away, I might as well go away now. I told him, I met this little girl. I told him the story, really waiting for him to say, well, how are you going to do both? You know, you need to contribute here. And he said, I think you should go for it. I'll help you figure it out. I married him. We're married 25 years this year. But that was the first time. And then I told my mother, and I told my father. My father was, you know, worried and didn't think it was a great idea. My mom said, I know you'll figure it out. But, you know, and it's, I know. And I can't imagine if you have a husband or a wife that's not going to support you. I can't imagine if you have kids who have expenses. And I can't imagine that. But I want people to know that they're not alone, and that it's part of the journey, you know, and don't turn back.
I mean, there's just so many gems in what you shared there. I want to hit on a few. So one of these is this idea that people are going to tear down. If you're doing something meaningful, if you're doing something that is listening to inner voice to your heart, most of the time it's going to go in the face of someone's expectations. I mean, it's not going to fit someone's narrative. And for that person, so many people, good people, struggle with the fact that if what you're doing does not align to my view of the world, well, I don't want to have to rethink my view of the world, so it's easier just to tear you down or tell you you're crazy. Because if I accept that actually maybe what you're doing is really meaningful and important and maybe more fulfilling than what I'm doing, well, what does that mean about me? And so it's just much easier to tear down or to criticize than it is to be introspective and say, oh, I can see the merit in that. I can see why that would be good. I would personally struggle with it for these reasons, but I think you should do whatever you feel. A lot of people are not at that place emotionally. And it's not a criticism of them. It's just they haven't gone through the experiences yet to know what that's like, to know how to encourage you on a journey like that. And so first of all, if you want to get advice, you got to find people who are there emotionally, because they can coach you. They can help with that journey. They've been there. Most people haven't. And most people, it's a threat that you're doing. So that's one.
And you have to let them go.
And you have to let those relationships go if they can't cope with it. That's exactly right. Because you're not going to get to the end of your life and be so happy that you met someone else's expectations. You're going to be happy if you really lived what you knew was right, what you knew your purpose was, what you found really fulfilling. And so there's so much leverage in this idea of finding the right mentors, cutting out the people who are destined to just cut you down, and being able to create that support system. And the second piece there was finding in a marriage and a partner someone who can really give you that support. I think that's so important. You know, there's a lot of out here to tell people how to get married or when to get married or if to get married. But I can tell you, I have found in my life, and now here's another story, and it's a pattern I've seen from a lot of people who've accomplished great things. They usually have someone there that's always in their corner, that's willing to support them, that's going to be through the good and the bad, because it's not going to be easy. And if you don't have that, it's so much harder on yourself. So I think when you're thinking about a partnership, when you're thinking about someone in your life, there's maybe nothing more important than this concept of, is this person really going to see my heart and fuel it and put fuel on the fire and help me really believe in myself and go after the things I want to go after? Because it's one thing to believe in yourself and to know that you can do it. You have to start there. You have to have some confidence in yourself. But there's going to be days where you doubt yourself. There's going to be days where you don't know how to make the money work. You are letting your partner down or whatever. And yet weeks and months even and years. And so having that person, I just made me so happy when I heard you talk about that, seeing the joy on your face. That's something that you gotta find. And if it's not a partner, a friend, a family, a loved one that has that for you, those people are invaluable in your life. Those are the people you have to prioritize and really invest in, because when you guys are fueling each other's heart, what really your purpose is, your happiness is in a totally different space. So anyways, just wanted to highlight some of those observations that I thought were so powerful from your story. So tell me then about, once you've made the transition, now you're focused on helping these kids. You want to give them pajamas. You want to tell them stories. you want to meet an emotional need. And that's another thing that I think people miss. We talk about how people don't understand what you're doing. People tend to think that life is all very logical. And yet so much of our experience is emotional. And so it's easy to criticize, well, like that one friend that you had, and say, well, why aren't you giving him a home? Or why aren't you doing something like this? And sure, those things might be very important. But at our core, what we all need is we need to meet our emotional needs. I mean, we're all just pursuing, we want to feel loved. We want to feel connected to people. We want to feel safe. You know, these kids that are in chaos or coming from real abuse or real hardship, they want to feel safe. And so it may not be intuitive to someone who's never experienced that or never seen it firsthand. They might think, well, just give them food. Well, they do want food and they need food, but who's meeting that emotional need for them when their parents have let them down or aren't there for them, or there's been tragedy? That's such a critical part that we can ignore. And this applies to every aspect of life. And so it's such a high leverage skill. If you want to accomplish bigger things, find more fulfillment, be more successful in business even, when you realize everyone's just trying to meet their emotional needs, it changes how you think about the world. So my question to you is, tell me about now, how did you go about really building from there? You knew what you had to do. You started in. What were the tactics? How did you go about? Did you raise money? Did you start to raise awareness? Did you just self-fund it all? What was it like to actually build this organization and be able to go make the impact that you've had?
Well, I laugh at the self-funded. No, I'm not a saver. I wasn't a saver. And then anybody is thinking that they want to do this, but they don't have any money, buy my book or email me. I will send you a copy, because I had nothing, and I got into debt and took credit cards away. And, you know, my husband had a sacrifice too. So I was not one of those people. But what saved me is the lesson that I teach most often, and it is the core of business success as well. Purpose has nothing to do with starting a nonprofit. You have purpose when you are a leader, when you are a team member, and you are serving. And that's what you want to do, whether you're making millions, good for you. You know, good for you. You are serving people. It's the human connection. And for children, it's exactly what you said, especially children who are at risk, who have been traumatized. And that incident happened to me, and the incidents happened to other people that have nothing to do with children, but it is something that is, they are helping in some way. You can make a box. If it helps people move things, it helps people find a place, you know, to put something that's safe, doesn't matter, as long as you are helping people. So I started talking. And you know what? The key to when you find your purpose and you start to tell people, you only need the right people. You only need the people who are going to resonate with you. I asked millions of people to support me buying pajamas for these kids. A small percentage resonated with my story. But when they resonate with your gift and want to share and start to share their, oh, you know what? You know why? I can relate to that because of this, because of that. You just need your team. You just need your people. You don't need everybody. So, you know, I had to learn not to be upset when I asked for support from somebody, you know, preferred to give to animals or seniors or a disease. I said, good for you. I'm so happy to hear that. That's great. Thank you. Let me know how I can help. And then you find your people. And that's all you need in anything. Not everybody's going to buy your product. You know, it's true what they say. Don't say, who's your market? Everybody. No. Find the people that you're serving. Find the people that also feel like they want to serve the same group. I think that's an issue that we've struggled with in hiring for the last 50 years. There's not a conversation with what do you want to give? How do you want to participate? Because we'd love you to participate in a way that's personal to you. We're not existing because we want robots to hire. We want to know how to build a family, for lack of a better word. If you don't want to use warm and fuzzy, you know, a team. We want some place where you are expressing what's important as a gift to our goal, so that everybody owns a piece, everybody's invested. And we haven't asked those questions until lately. And it's difficult for some people on both sides. to accept that that's how we have to, I believe, begin the hiring process, begin looking for people. It's a big task for HR, big. And I think it's important. It starts there. You know, that's a why question. That's a purposeful question. You know, what do you love and what can you bring here? You love golf. People might think, oh, there's nothing to do in a factory with golf. Yes, there is. Maybe everybody who has an interesting hobby wants to come on Friday at lunch, and everybody who wants to learn how to play golf can get a lesson. I mean, there's so many ways to invite people to share something that will make them feel what you said, that we want to feel seen and heard and noticed and cared about and appreciated. And certainly in a big way, back to the children, you know, we did, and people got that it wasn't the material. It wasn't that they had something that, you know, that felt warm and fuzzy. It's that they were feeling the arms around them. They were feeling the hug. They were feeling, you know, somebody cared. Somebody knew they didn't have pajamas. And I would never have guessed that at the beginning. That's something I learned from spending time with the kids and the adults, that that's what we were really giving them.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. And I think that ability to share something that's so personal to you, a mission, a purpose, a cause, and then when people, what feels like, reject it, be able to respond with love and empathy for what matters to them. That is the difference between really getting beat down quickly and feeling optimistic and feeling great. You can't control how people are going to respond. You can't control, and it's not realistic that everyone is going to be able to contribute, is going to care about your cause, it's going to resonate with them. And so you have to be deeply resilient emotionally to be able to hear that and then say, I still care about what you care about, and I'm willing to help if I can help you. And I'm just going to give, and I'm going to be that way, no matter how you are towards me. Because long term, that's going to attract the right people to me. Long term, that's going to bring those people around me that I need, that are going to be able to donate, going to be able to help me accomplish this purpose. And so I think it's just a beautiful sentiment. And it's also something, it's a skill that we all have to work on, because we can get so tied up. And this is one of those things that can just torpedo your ability to find purpose in life. If you're more tied up in how people think about you than how you think about yourself, you're going to lose. You're going to feel empty, because it's an impossible game you're playing. You can't make everyone happy. You can't meet everyone's expectations. And so if you really want to do something meaningful, you have to know what you want, why you want it, and then go take the action to make that happen, and not let that be hindered just because a majority of people will not see it your way. It's fine.
Those few who do will make you so strong, and together, you know, my favorite, you know, Heather used to say, oh, look at the power of one. And even I did before I started the whole pajama program. I was working, one person can do so much. Look at these famous people, Einstein, Oprah Winfrey, Deepak Chopra, Gandhi, one person, wow. And then people would say to me, when they'd see pajama program growing, and I would say, do you not see the millions of people that hold me up when I'm falling, or that have joined hands? And I realized, you know, it's not the power of one that changes things. It's the power of one another that moves mountains and moves people. And I teach that, and I speak about that, because we have just started to touch the surface of the power of the human connection. And to say what I said before, and to say what you're saying, you only need the people who will stand with you. You don't need everyone, because everyone has a different purpose. And we need everyone to have their own people, because we need, you know, variety. There are so many things that need attention and need light and need a voice. And I was so happy with my little group that does amazing things.
You know, so starting out, you're just finding those few that it resonates with, and yet that blossoms for you into appearances in various magazines, publications, shows, from Glamour to Parenting Magazine to Forbes to the major news networks to the early show, Good Morning America, and then Oprah even. And And when you think about that now, again, looking back, if you let all those detractors get to you, that none of them would have guessed that you'd get to where you got. None of them would have guessed that you would have attracted that kind of attention. So my question really is, one, tell me about how validating and fulfilling it was to get that kind of attention. And two, what did you learn along the way? What was it like to go from, I'm just trying to get that traction of a few people who believe in me, to now you've created a real movement, you've gotten really broad reach. What was that progression like, and what has it meant to you?
Well, I started to realize the more I told the story about the little girl, the more it was like I was channeling her, you know, and I've learned the power of what you believe in outside of yourself. I've learned the power of the universe, of God, whatever you call it. There is a power and an energy out there that when you are on purpose and moving in a direction with this passion and honest heart, North Star, a movement, things come, power comes, people come. And I felt like I was channeling that little girl. I realized I could see it in people's eyes because all I had was that story. That's what moves me to this day when I speak about lessons I learned and leadership lessons I've learned, is the power of a story that changed my life and I went through the mud to get to the other side. People feel you. The right people that you need feel that story. And there's something, because I think we all have this yearning in us. We all have some size hole in us that we, because if we didn't, we wouldn't doubt ourselves. And come on, we all doubt ourselves. We all tell ourselves the worst things. You know, somebody doesn't look at you. Oh my God, what did I do? I must have done something. And you lose sleep because maybe they didn't see you in the room, but you think they saw you and they're ignoring you. It's ridiculous how much negativity we feed ourselves and how much confidence we don't think we have. So I think when you find those people that resonate, it gives you what you need as a leader to make fast decisions and to do things. So one woman called me before 9/11 and she said, I'm from Parenting Magazine. Can we write a little story? Are you the lady giving pajamas to the children in Harlem in the shelters? And I said, yes. And she said, can I write just a little story, just like a paragraph? I said, sure. So I was in my one bedroom apartment and this woman wrote the story and she said, it's going to come out in a few months. And 9/11 happened. And of course the world stopped and it stopped, you know, the fastest in New York before everybody got news split second later. And literally she called me a week later and she said, we've stopped the presses on everything because nobody knew, if you remember, I remember, if we were going to be alive, right? Is this going to be an ongoing assault? Is everything going to crumble? And so it was just, we were numb and we were just going through the motions and waiting and watching. So I figured nothing's going to happen with my kids in the pajamas. I can visit them. I can do what I can, but you know, everything is nothing's going to happen. Well, we sort of got back on our feet and the woman called and she said, it's going to run in the December/January issue. I said, okay, great. What I didn't know was in that vulnerable state, we were all in. People couldn't do enough. Boxes, thousands of boxes, Spencer, arrived at my one bedroom. Thousands, letters and boxes. I almost got kicked out. Then nobody knew in the building what I was doing and I was getting in trouble. I didn't know what I was doing. I was newly married. We got boxes into the apartment up to our heads. And we started opening them and they were yelling at us. But I said, let me see what this is about before you kick me up. Letters from people, because the magazine got to the homes before it got to the newsstands for the people who subscribed. Millions of people were writing, sending pajamas, sending cash, notes. I said, oh my God, what is this? People felt the hole that I said to you, I think we all have in that vulnerable moment. And they just had to do something to hold one child, to hug one child, to kiss one child goodnight. They couldn't imagine that loneliness and that pain. But in the moment, I opened a letter that said from a company, they said, please send us your 501c3 so we can give you a grant. I looked at my new husband. I said, what is this thing? 501c3. I didn't know what a nonprofit was. I didn't know that's what it was. I was just doing this on my own. And then I looked at everything in the department and I said, this is a responsibility. These people care. I am not alone. I will eat again. You know, I can build this because look, people want to support this. And I had to go down that, you know, that road of paperwork and IRS and government and attorney to do it. I didn't even have the money for that, but it came, you know, and I can't say enough about trusting yourself that you are on a path that you will share with other people who do have the means, who do know more than you, but you can't grasp that early.
I love that. Just as a I don't want to say tactic because that almost feels like a cheapening word. I would say a strategy that is so powerful that you shared there, that was the difference between when you were telling people just, hey, this is what I want to do. You know, there's these kids, they need help. I'm going to give them pajamas. And people, many people are looking at you like you're crazy. Versus when you tell that story and you tell it so vividly of what you saw, what you experienced, what you felt, and why that then created this need to help. Even me as a listener, just on this podcast, already having respect for you, the difference in what I felt was huge. And I think storytelling, it's the basis for really connecting to our soul. Every religion that exists in the world, what do? They have books, and the books tell stories, and the stories are what help people to really feel what they need to feel to change or to conform to certain norms or certain practices that will make their life better or make the world better. And when you think about that, then it makes me just wonder, man, I've got to be a better storyteller. I've got to be able to help people for anything I care about that I'm really passionate about. I've got to one, have the experience, because you don't want to just make up some bullshit story. You've got to have a real story, which means you got to go have the experiences. You got to get hands on. You got to be there in that area that you're passionate about. And once you have that power, then to be able to tell that story effectively so other people get transported there, they experience it, and they want to tap into that part of themselves. I'm just so impressed, and that touched me so much hearing about this, and then hearing how that took you in a matter of days from struggling to get this thing going and just dumping your time and energy into it to an overwhelming preponderance of support from people that wanted to be involved, wanted to be a part of that story. Like it's such an important strategy to understand, but it's also important to see that the second principle at play there, which is this idea of that, again, most religions teach in some form of fashion, this idea that in losing yourself, you find yourself. It was in really not making it about you that all of a sudden you found all these people that wanted to support you, because they wanted to support the cause. You know, you were just the conduit. But if you make it about you, people aren't going to care to support. When you make it about who it should be about, which is the people you're serving, the cause you're pursuing, then people do want to help. And so there's just so many valuable takeaways in there. But I just love how that story has been so powerful for you. And I was touched by it just as you shared it.
Yeah, I didn't know either until I was brave enough to tell people the story and not worry about what I was worried about for so long. The reaction would be like my friends.
Yeah. Well, as we wrap up, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about a few things. One, any advice for anyone that's listening to the podcast? Is there any closing advice? I know you've done a lot. You're an author, you're a speaker, you're obviously driving forward a really important cause with the pajama program. But if you look back and you think about just the few things that you would have taught yourself earlier that would have helped you to realize this vision earlier, feel more fulfilled earlier, what would you tell? What would be the few things that you would leave the audience with? And after that, we'll also dive into how people can get involved and support such a great cause.
Thank you. Well, first, and it goes to what you're saying, but let me just say, I ran Pajama Program as executive director for 20 years. And in that 20 years, I learned so many leadership and life lessons and was asked to speak so much that I realized more and more people were willing to start thinking about purpose and how to live a different life, because I was honest with my fears and my financial issues and everything. So I knew I wanted to write the book and speak. So I passed the baton of executive directorship to Jamie, who was president of our board. And she said, if you ever seriously want to do that, you know, purpose part two, I will run Pajama Program. So I passed the baton, salary and everything to her. And the reception has been great. And I didn't time it to come after COVID, which scared me when I saw that I was going to be in COVID doing this. But it's also been a blessing that people are open to looking for purpose. I tell people, call me. Let me try to talk you off the ledge, because unless I tell you the down and dirty of my fears, you might think you're alone. And that's the first step. So I'm still in touch with so many people that I try to be honest, who I was honest with, who at least could breathe to say, okay, so I'm not expecting purpose to be this beautiful, you know, easy ice skating, you know, event. It's not. And once you get past that, you know, I'm happy to talk to you a little bit about the slide piece, because everybody deserves to have the life in there, in their back burner passion project. So call me, try to get in touch with me. Let me talk to you a little bit and see where you are and be an ear, because often these people don't have somebody that they can be honest with. So I always offer that, and I'm happy to offer that again. And once you get to a point where you can tell someone, you'd be amazed at the support when you start telling people. Start, because you're going to voice it with emotion and love and energy, and you never know that you might be talking to somebody who's like, I wish I could tell someone I really want to be a ballet dancer. I wish I could tell someone, you know, that I really want to open a dog grooming, you know, place. And you never know the chain reaction you're going to start. And I'm willing to bet you are going to change other people, whether you know it or not, once you are honest and you give life to your passion. You're just honest.
That's beautiful. If people want to get involved with a Pajama Program, is there something better to do than to go to pajamaprogram.com? I know that that's where people, or I'm sorry, .org, pajamaprogram.org, where you can obviously see everything they're working on, donate money, get a volunteer to help. Is there anywhere else they should be thinking about on the Pajama Program side?
No, it's pajamaprogram.org. Yeah, that's right. Me and ask me any questions or whatever, that's my website, genevievepaturo.com.
Wonderful. And so the genevievepaturo.com, that's where people go if they're looking for that conversation that you just talked about, if they want to get in touch with you. You also offer masterminds to help people with this. And so talk just a bit about, masterclasses to help people with this. Talk a little bit about what you're doing right now and how you're offering services to help people find their purpose.
Sure. Well, I wrote my book, so that's always the first thing. So then you know what I've been through, because I speak, and it's good. I always have the person who is going to hire me read my book, so they see some of the life lessons, and then we could talk about how I can make it personal to their teams or their path or their company's growth. Because there are a lot of lessons in there that I learned that we're learning as leaders need to be. So there's the speaking, keynote speaking opportunities. There are masterclasses on everything for groups who are looking to find their purpose. A lot of them are chapter two. They've done a career. Now they want to feel fulfilled, and they might be able to have more time for it. There are masterclasses on feel the fear and do it anyway. There are masterclasses on how to listen to your heart and lead from your heart. I think that more and more leaders are realizing that they're not bosses, you know, or at least the more successful ones who will probably retain more people have a heart-led leadership style. So that's changing. The whole list, everything is on the website, and it's all about living who you are through your heart, with the human connection as a pillar right next to purpose.
That's beautiful. Well, if you're hearing this and that resonates with you, make sure to go to GenevievePaturo.com. You can see all about her TED Talk, her Oprah appearance, her books, her master classes, all of the different ways that she can help and support you. So you've been wonderful to have today, Genevieve. So thank you so much. And we wish you nothing but success, both with your nonprofit as well as with your new endeavors.
Thank you, Spencer. Thank you for giving us this opportunity, all of us, to share what we love. It's just part of helping us be successful. So thank
you. My pleasure. Hey, before you go, I have a small request. Our mission is to empower as many people as possible to maximize their potential through the power of leverage. Could you help us in this mission by leaving a review on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube? And if you know just one person who would benefit from today's episode, would you please share it with them? Your support means the world to us, and we are thrilled to have you in the community. Thank you for being a part of our journey and helping us grow. You can find show notes for today's show and past shows at lessonsinleverage.com, which also has links to connect with me personally and connect with our various podcast channels across your favorite social networks. A big thanks to Solve.cloud, who sponsored this episode. They're a group of expert consultants that help SaaS and financial services companies to implement, optimize, and manage Salesforce.com. They can help you with custom integration solutions and are helping customers to implement some of the most important generative AI technologies. You can find them at Solved.cloud. That's SOLVD.cloud is the URL. Thanks again, and we'll talk soon.